Come on, let's go. Come on, let's go.
When you hear Stone Cold, you know it's time to get serious. We got a new mixer today, so we've been fiddling. So, FA Podcast, Final Approach, February 5th. We're going to talk to a pretty important person. It's not me. Obviously, we're going to get on the phone my buddy Brad Fenson. Brad is as cool as it gets when we get to like waterfowl and doing certain things in the outdoor industry. Actually we'll just get him on the phone and we'll just chit chat because, that's my dude. So, there we go. Fenson Residence.
Yes. How can we help you?
I'm waving around my snow sock flag for all the people to see because I just feel like doing it. So
good.
So, if anybody hears that, we're just prepping. We're just prepping for snows.
It won't be far. I hear they're headed north already.
Yes, the white devil is on the move, is what I hear, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yep. All right, everybody, we're talking to Brad Fenson, outdoor writer. I tried to explain you in my little Facebook post or my Instagram post, and I think I put I should have put excellent shot, but I put great shot, so my bad. I put outdoor writer, great shot, excellent chef. So I just should have gave 5 stars for everything. So my bad, you know.
I was worried that you're going to say, here's a guy that definitely has a face for podcast.
Well, we go live, so everybody unfortunately gets to see me, and I don't care, okay? Because we're going to talk, we're going to have a good time, we're going to go through a bunch of info, and it is what it is. So now that duck season is over everywhere, so the crying, I could hear the crying now, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure you could hear it all the way in Alberta.
Oh, we could, but I mean, our countdown started again just before Christmas, so.
Right. So you guys are ready to get back on the map come September 1, so you're not crying that much for us. So, and if I lived there, I'd be doing the same thing. So
Right. Don't
even worry about it. So, but we will get a crack at spring snows, depending on when they're going to slide through. So I didn't buy my plane tickets yet, so I'm just waiting to see when I get the go-ahead. So,
right.
So like I was saying, since everybody has started crying, there is a little late goose. We have late goose. Ours starts actually this weekend in Oregon. There are a couple other places like Missouri, I think, is going until maybe this weekend too. So there's a couple closing, couple, you know, so guys are on and off. And, of course, spring snows down here. So first thing I want to talk about is how many animals did you kill this year? Do you, because this is, you know, when I talk to people, everybody's like, everybody that watches your Facebook and your Instagram is like, oh my God, there's another animal. Oh my God, there's a pile of birds. Oh my God, there's a moose.
And I like to tell people we eat well around here.
Well, listen, there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it that when I come up there, the eating is incredible, okay? And I was trying to explain to some people, like, listen, Brad and his family, like, they don't go to the grocery store. Like, yeah, you go to get milk or sometimes bread and this and the other stuff. But as far as, like, meat, like, no. Like, everything is imported. Whether it comes from a mule deer hunt in Nebraska or a moose in Alberta or whatever. So, which is awesome. So we're going to get into some recipes, and if you got a couple good ones, I could throw them up on Instagram tomorrow and throw some links or whatever we can do to you know, get some people you know, cooking a little bit better, because that's always kind of the downfall. Like, oh, I don't like duck, I don't like goose, I don't like this. You know, how do I get it? How do I get the gaminess out? Like, listen, the gaminess is part of it. Like, that's the whole deal.
Right. Gaminess doesn't mean that it needs to taste bad. You need to embrace it. And
right.
It's like if you're used to eating beef and you try pork, it doesn't taste gamey. It tastes different.
Correct. Like right. Gamey is – wild game is different. That's it. You know what I mean? You know,
right.
Like, listen, you know, when we go on our trips to China and stuff, like, they don't raise chickens over in China. They raise ducks. You know, that's their chicken over there. So when you go, like, every dish has duck. You know what I mean? There's duck everything. But their duck over there is not our wild duck. It's more like our raised chicken. Do you know what I mean? So it's different. So,
yes.
So everybody's got to, like you said, embrace what it is, but also figure out how to cook it. You know what I mean? That's huge.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand what you're dealing with. It's no different than working with domestic meat. You can cook a chicken breast and overdo it, and it tastes terrible. The texture's terrible.
There you go.
And nobody's going to eat it. So once you understand how to cook waterfowl and what the differences are between the domestic meats that you're used to cooking,
that's right.
People will be asking you to come for dinner.
That's right. So let's get into, like, the fun part, because that's the part everybody likes to hear. So how many animals? So what did you take this year? So you shot an elk in Alberta.
Yeah, I started in the spring. I actually harvested two black bears.
There you go. Okay, so
and,
two bears.
And we shared some blind time and shot some spring snows.
Yes,
we had a great time. It was an interesting spring, because out of all the birds we shot, we only had two juveniles. So
yes,
we had a lot of adult snow geese that were used for cooking. And
that's right.
To be quite frank, they were just as good as everything else.
And
the rest of the fall was pretty amazing. I did have a moose draw in Alberta this year, shot a nice moose. And I shot one of my biggest whitetails in many years here at home, right in my backyard.
Yeah.
10-point crossbow, which was very exciting.
I do remember that.
Yeah, and I shot a really nice buck in South Dakota. And it was, it was 26.5 inches wide with a drop tine. And we ended up in a very remote area and ended up boning out the deer and packing everything out on our backs, which makes it even more rewarding.
Oh, yeah.
Two great whitetails in Nebraska, and a really nice deer out of Oklahoma as well. Rut and Strut Outfitters. I've hunted with him,
oh, yeah,
Todd Rogers, several times.
Oh, yeah.
And finally connected on a really dandy whitetail. That was a late season archery hunt, which, you know, was a nice way to round the year out, I'd say.
Yeah, and Todd's got, that's where you shot your bobcat last year too. Todd's got great stuff down there.
Yeah, I mean, incredible waterfowling, great deer hunting.
Yeah.
I shot, I think it was I was hunting there, and we hunted together in February, and again this fall, I think I shot 9 hogs there this year, too.
Oh, my God, that's fun.
So it's a pretty amazing place. The deer hunting's awesome. Predators.
Well, I've never been there for the turkeys, and the turkey hunting there is ridiculous, because we passed a field when me and you were down there. I remember passing a field, and there's 200 plus turkeys on a tree line in the trees roosting. I'd never
right.
seen anything like that in my life.
Right. When I was there in December, I shot a nice whitetail and immediately purchased a fall, or if some people call them winter, turkey tag, and
right.
went out and set up a blind and shot a gobbler the next morning with the 10-point, and that's one of the reasons why Todd let me shoot it with a crossbow. I didn't disturb the winter roost.
Right.
And
right.
there was probably close to 600 turkeys within a one square mile area.
I don't doubt it.
It was just incredible. The sights and sounds, the experience is worth the visit on its own, whether you're hunting or just watching.
Yeah, they you know, everybody, I think Oklahoma is definitely one of those sleeper states. Like, we went down to shoot cranes this past year, right in Quanah, Texas, and he's kind of in Oklahoma and Texas. And you know, I think Oklahoma is that sleeper state that has it, has a lot. I mean, oh my God. I mean, when we were down there, the last day I was down there when we shot some ducks, then you shot a deer. Then we started predator hunting, and, you know, there was one day where, you know, we did 14 sets. We didn't call in a bug. And then the next morning the wind's ripping and I pull off the morning of mornings. And
yeah, you were showing off big time.
Oh my God. I mean, that was the best. That was the best predator hunt. Well, I don't want to say best. That was the best two coyote sets I've ever had in my life. I shot a double, then I shot a triple. And that's, yeah. I mean, that, I just said, shut it down. Like, the next set, I'm just going to screw it up. So let's just go back. I mean, other than you and I going to JL Bar Ranch in Texas and shooting, you know, whatever, 30-some foxes in a couple days. I mean, that was...
34 gray fox in 2 days. That was unbelievable.
And the thing is, they don't even, you know, remember, I remember calling Gabe down there and I said, hey, you know, what else is there to do? Because, listen, I'm not a deer hunter. Deer just doesn't do it for me. I'll eat it. I love it. I love guys who go hunt them and that's their passion. It's just not me. Like, I don't live and breathe it. So I was like, hey, what else can we do when we're down there? Like, do you have any coyotes or this? But the crazy thing about down there, remember, that was like a sheep area, and they had eradicated every coyote. I mean, all the sets we did down there, 13,000 acres of that place, and we didn't hear, see, or any sign of a coyote. That was bananas to me.
Right, which is why there were so many foxes, because the foxes actually take a beating from the coyotes.
Right, they were thriving. There's no doubt about it. They were all about it. So we've had, you know, listen, we'll have to have another show where it's just like we go through everywhere we've been. Because there's some pretty cool stories. Just the stuff we've seen and been involved in is just, and just some cool places. I mean, things that, you know, everybody always talks about, like, what's your bucket list and what's this and what's that. I mean, just going and having, you know, seeing a bunch of stuff and having good company and going is, I mean, that's half the battle right there. So,
well, it is, and good company is a big part of it, because I think you and I play off each other in terms of what we could do for our next adventure, or to make sure we get out in the field in the spring and again in the fall, and what can we do at the end of the season. And, you know, having somebody that's highly motivated and with the same mindset as yourself goes a long ways.
Yeah, because one of us, the problem is, one of us has always got, like, the next trip planned.
Indeed.
Which is spring snows.
Yes, not far. I'm counting the days.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So I'm going to go through a simple thing that I do with a lot of my duck and goose meat. And I'll let you maybe think if there's one recipe that's easy for guys to make. Because, you know, the time is always a factor. And the prep is always a factor. You know what I mean? You got to have time to do it. You got to prep it right. You got to have time to cook it right. You know, or if you don't, like you said before, doesn't matter if it's wild game or not, bad things happen in the kitchen if you're not following, you know, everything. So what I ended up doing, and you've had it when you're down here, is I take it, and the thing that we eat the most here in my household is, like, ground meat. So I found, like, the best ground sausage place, I think, that's in the area, which is a little place over in Malala down here, and they make incredible pork sausage, and they also do wild game. And I said, can you do this, like, my wild game into like a mild Italian ground sausage? He's like, oh yeah, all day. So I get it back in, like, little pound packs and shrink wrapped, and then I'll just bust those out and make hamburgers in the summer, or even in the winter. I've made chili, I've made lasagna, I've made meatballs, I've made like spaghetti, like meat sauce. I did meatloaf. So I mean, there's a million things you can do with ground, and that to me takes out, like, the prep time. And worrying, like, the other thing is, am I going to overcook it? Because, like you said, as soon as you overcook wild game, it's like like a brick. Forget it.
Cook anything. Go into, you know, a top U.S. steakhouse and order your beef well done and see what they say.
They'll say, there's the door. Like, we don't do that to our meat. There's no doubt they do that. You know what I mean?
You can sell it.
right. They're going to tell you to hit the door. Right. So that's what I'm saying. So that's what I do just because we got, you know, and I'm sure I'm no different than everybody else. We got a busy household. We're running all the time. And that just seems to be, and also make breakfast burritos in the morning with it. So it has so many uses, and it'll never get old instead of just going, hey, I'm going to cook us up some duck breasts. Or, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm going to put cherry sauce on it. I'm going to put this, you know what I mean?
Yep.
You know what I mean? I'm always going, like, what can I make next with this? And it gives you a million options. So is there something that, and I know you came down to the Waterfowl Festival last summer too and cooked a bunch of stuff and everybody was like all about it. So,
right, and we actually posted that chili recipe on their site, did we not?
We did. That chili recipe was just...
So, I mean, you talk about ground meat, and I think most households, whether you're buying meat or if you're a deer hunter or an elk hunter, you definitely have and use a lot of ground meat. So why don't waterfowlers embrace it as well?
Right.
I mean, your family actually taught me a lot about using ground duck and goose for a lot more recipes and menu planning. And it's a great way. It's a great problem to have because your families are like, do you have more of that?
Right.
Which means you should be out in the field hunting more.
Right. So that means I like late season goose here. Like I got to try to pour it to them. And when guys, are like, oh, you know, my freezer's full or I'll take it. I got
it. But you know how we deal with that at the Fenson household.
Oh.
We buy a freezer.
That's right. That's, you know, the thing down here is I don't shoot like 11 animals a year. So I don't have to worry about having, you know, a couple freezers. So especially a moose. I did enjoy cutting up the moose and I do enjoy eating the moose and I'd love to do all that. So a moose, listen, deer meat's great. Elk meat's great. But the king of king for me is moose. There's no doubt about it.
Yes. And you embraced it with open arms this year because my moose hunt took longer than I expected, and by the time I got home, you were already here, and we had a fair bit of processing to do. I had two moose from camp that we had to deal with, and I think you helped cut, wrap, and grind for 2 days.
Yeah, me and Timmy were on it.
Bird hunting.
Yeah, me and Timmy were on it, and we, you know, I don't know what did we end up with? Like eight, had to be, I don't know, 800 pounds, something crazy like that.
Yeah, I mean, when you know, people are listening and they probably think this is a bit absurd or exaggerated, but we actually have what we call our moose freezer.
Right.
Right.
And I mean, we cut steaks, we did grind, we packaged it, we wrapped it, we did like back straps, like we wrapped every, I mean, we were, you know, listen, my dad was a butcher growing up. I mean, I remember, you know, growing up in Pennsylvania, which this is like people would be all freaked out about this, but I remember my dad working in a grocery store, a huge chain, you know, chain grocery store. And I remember during deer season, soon as it started, they would section off the freezer, the cooler, where guys were bringing in their deer to get processed. You know, today people would be freaking out saying, you know, you can't be processing a deer here when you're doing my chicken. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's what Pennsylvania was all about. You know what I mean? Like that's how cool Pennsylvania was when I was growing up. And I remember, oh my God, I just remember deer hanging and you couldn't see the end of the line of deer. You know what I mean? That were hanging and that were getting processed and guys were waiting, you know, so it was incredible.
Yeah, and we did a lot of meat. We kept everything, steaks, roast. We did our grind. We kept, you know, from the briskets to the shanks, you name it, all to make specialty dishes. But moose grind is pretty special. I remember the first time you came up here, I had made some moose salami, and we cut them into like half-inch chunks when we were out in the goose blind, and you called it moose cookies.
Oh, my God.
You know, it's just a really good reference and example about what you can do with ground meat. And when we talk about ducks and geese, you can make all of that stuff out of waterfowl, and it tastes just as good. Like, you'd be hard-pressed to say, well, that's deer or that's goose, and it's not that you lose the identity of the waterfowl, but you sure make believers of everyone around you about eating wild game.
Well, and listen, there, like I said, on the grind, you know, you could do so many things. Like, last time, I think you had either antelope or elk, and I'm not sure, and we made like calzones, like a stromboli, like a calzone with, like, you know, oh my God, like, that was incredible. And you've made, you know, like, think about the ground elk, like we did enchiladas, or, you know, think of all the things you could do on grind.
Yeah, chimichangas.
Oh,
you ever
my
God. Remember the elk chimichangas?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. There's so much. And if everybody says, you know, like I said, it always comes down to time and prep and people being afraid of, you know, like cookie, because I know, listen, I was there years ago. Like, I was afraid to make a wild game dish in fear of, if it doesn't turn out good, like, I don't have a backup. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not as skilled as you. I mean, I come up to the house and you got, you know, listen, like, you guys have everything, you know. Camp Chef, you know, is like your best friend, like Brooks and them, like, they take care of you because you are cooking constantly and helping them out. So there's so much you can do if you just kind of get to it. So is there something, well, think about a recipe that we could throw up or two tomorrow, or we could send a link to people so they could, you know, check you out or check your stuff out. I'm getting
well,
some.
Well, you know, it's pretty easy. We talked about ground duck, and last year at the Oregon Waterfowl Festival, we cooked waterfowl chili. And
that's right.
I think I made 3 gallons of it. We had a Camp Chef stove out on the patio and some cast iron Dutch ovens going. And people, like, these are duck hunters that hunt ducks religiously every year.
That's right.
They came out and tried it and were, like, they were in awe. They couldn't believe that it was ducks and geese.
That's what I mean. And listen, and you could always throw
everything
else. That
recipe is actually on their website. So if you Google the Oregon Waterfowl Association, you should be able to look up the recipes there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, listen, and it doesn't, you know, listen, there's guys here that hunt everything, right? And if they have grind, you can throw all your grind together and get it packaged so you're ready to go for anything. You know what
right.
I mean? I mean, listen, there's a religious dish that happens at every family function on my wife's side, and it's a chili cheese dip, okay? And everybody, there's like, there'll be 100 people, all family at this thing, and everybody's got their paws in the chili cheese dip, okay? And I mean, some people are like elbow deep in it, right? That's how,
yep.
That's how good it is. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm thinking I'm going to make us some wild game chili cheese dip next time I'm up, because it's like a couple ingredients. You're talking about, you know, you're talking about ground meat and all the ingredients on a chili side, which are super easy. And then just adding some cream cheese and some other, like some shredded cheese, like,
I'm already thinking, like, widgeon chili cheese.
Ooh, like, that's what I mean.
Yes. You know, that's a good point, because you can take any recipe out there, you can convert it to waterfowl. If people are looking for new recipes, if you go to AmericanHunter.org or just Google American Hunter,
right.
The website will come up. Most people are familiar with it. It's the NRA's publications and online site. I do 2 recipes for them a month, and if you Google recipes or just put in my name, put in Fenson, F-E-N-S-O-N, 200 recipes will come up.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's a million recipes. Like,
right.
That's
so
what I'm
all
saying.
All kinds of them on waterfowl. You'll right. find duck ragu. You'll find a recipe on there for elk chimichangas. But you can make that elk chimichanga with ground duck or ground goose.
That was
so good. If you're looking for a good recipe site, there is a pretty good compilation of them there.
So is there anything on the, like I said, I know we do a bunch of stuff with Brooks and stuff at Camp Chef. Is there, I know you were doing a bunch of stuff for there. Do they have a dedicated part to their site at all, or is there...
No, they don't. And you know, most of the time when I'm working with companies like Camp Chef, I love their pellet grills and their stoves, and their griddles and their grill boxes and all the rest of it. I do make mention of that in a lot of the recipes, and there's links, like hot links, right in the recipes that you can go to their site. But they do not have a site where I have a bunch of recipes, Camp Chef products.
Well, and like I said, they do so much in there. Those guys are definitely hunters and hardcore guys. You know what I mean? So I mean, that's always a positive, because, you know, you're sometimes in this industry, you know, you're talking to some people who don't really, you know, hunt as much or at all. So obviously we're, even inside the hunting community, we're kind of, you know, we're choosy about who we deal with, only because, like, the true hunters and the guys are doing this for the, you know, the right reasons, kind of stick together and hang out and do a bunch of stuff together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, those that embrace the outdoor lifestyle tend to flock together, you know, waterfall pun intended, because we really do. We gravitate together in any event, whether we know each other or not. We seem to find each other on the floor and start talking about our passion.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Which always includes feathers.
There's no doubt. It's constant. It is totally constant. I'm trying to think of my best, like my favorite thing that you've made. So maybe somebody can go and Google it. The elk chimichangas that was pretty incredible. But you did something this past fall. You did antelope. You had, what did you have in antelope? What the heck?
I think I did an Asian inspired antelope, which was with some olive oil and sesame oil and green onions and sesame seeds and stuff like that. And actually, that's on the American Hunter website. You ask about favorite recipes, and I made a dish recently that my wife Steph has loved and said that I need to make it again, and that's duck ragu.
Extremely
easy to make, but very flavorful. You do not lose the duck in it, which that's always important to me. Like, the recipes I cook, I'm not trying to mask or hide what I'm cooking. You vividly recall when I cooked you antelope or elk and different things, because it is unique and it's there, but it's good. And you remember it. You know, it's like having a good beefsteak or a good pork chop or, you know, the perfect chicken leg. You know, you remember it for what it is. We do the same thing on the wild side, and you find recipes that you embrace because it makes the wild game the highlight of the dish. You don't lose their presence, you don't lose their quality, and the duck ragu is one that stands out that I've recently done that is really worth looking into.
Yeah, I mean, because here's the other
green
thing.
Onion.
Oh, hold on. Just did that. I'm trying to look at some comments and see if we could pull a couple things up. The thing that I was going to say is, you know, long ago I would always remember, like, people who couldn't cook it or do anything were always trying to hide the wild game in the dish. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, just like you said, you need to make it the star and bring it out and talk about it and have it be the forefront, and that's what you taste. And you know what I mean? That's what you need to do. You got to embrace that and get it out there. So there's no doubt that that's what you got to do. So,
yeah, and I mean, you talk about going to China and having duck being the most popular dish on the menu.
Right.
Duck should be one of the most popular dishes amongst hunters as well, but the average hunter does not pluck and draw all of their fowl.
Right.
And duck is amazing food, but the fat and the skin adds an incredible amount of flavor. And, you know, if you haven't tried that, you need to. It will help you enjoy eating duck or goose a whole lot more. And I think that I'd like it to lead into a new discussion on the seasons, because you come up here and we hunt early September, and our birds are full of pin feathers, have zero fat. They're still fun to hunt. They have great muscles, so you get good breast meat, good legs, good thighs, but it's a a whole new cooking process, and you need different recipes for birds that have zero fat on them versus ones that you could shoot in Oregon or Arkansas the last week of the season that are fat and sassy and can plucked perfectly. You know, you look at some of the other recipe pages and wild game chefs out there, and duck fat rules. There's, you know, Compi and high-end restaurants that cook with duck fat are renowned. You can order specialty caramels and stuff made in the southern states with duck fat that are, you know, they're a delicacy.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Hunters have a gold mine usually in hand at the end of a day, but how they embrace it is a different story. You know, are you a hunter that breasts everything out? Do you take legs and thighs? Do you pluck many birds? What's your specialty? What's your favorite? What do you do at different times of the year? Is a mallard with yellow fat better than a pintail with white fat? Because guess what? They're all different. It's like describing the difference. You tell me the difference between a beefsteak and a pork chop. What's it taste like?
Yeah,
it's definitely different.
Right.
The texture's different. The flavor's different. Well, every duck is different as well, whether they're eating sago pond weed or they're eating barley or winter wheat. They all take on different flavors. So waterfowl hunters should be spoiled with a canvas of different flavors and species that they can harvest. And one thing that I'd really like to do is try to challenge people to utilize more of their birds and pluck and draw as many birds as possible. And, I mean, I don't need to tell you this, but I don't like to waste any part of the birds. And when you come up here, you're always like, do you want to take all of the legs and thighs? And I'm like, yeah, I do want to take anyone that's not shot up terribly. I want to keep all of them.
Well, and that's the rough part. I mean, because, you know, you'll get into some shoots and, you know, we're cleaning birds and man, I have cut myself, I don't know how many times, like trying to get some legs off because somebody busted that thigh bone in there. You know what I mean? So, and usually, I don't know, for some reason we got some low shooters when you and I go and the legs seem to get clipped.
Yep. True story.
So it sucks trying to, and I was just going to like actually talk about that because when we shot all those specks and snows early 2 years ago, and that was early, you had a dry rub that you were doing on the legs. Oh my God. And you just did them with literally, it was a dry rub and you put them on the smoker and they were lights out. That I remember vividly as well, because that was, I was impressed just because of the ease it was. I mean, literally we were talking about rinsing them, literally putting shake on them, you know, like a rub on them, putting them on a pan in the smoker, and out they pop, and they were all gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh. Low and slow with the legs and thighs. Most people, when they try them, they're going to like them better than the breast meat. And some people are probably shaking their head in disbelief, but I've actually had lots of people tell me that. I actually had an editor of a fowl magazine eat goose legs, big honkers, like giant Canadas. The legs are, you know, meal-sized.
Right.
And huge doubt in camp, and I cooked dinner that night, and he came to me afterwards and said, you know what, I have to admit I'm embarrassed. All these years I've been throwing the legs and thighs out, and it's better than the breast meat.
Right.
He said, I'll never throw another one out in my life. And those are great stories to hear. So the thing with legs and thighs is cook them low and slow.
Right.
I like to braise them first if possible. You can put them in a slow cooker and cook them down for 5-6 hours. Instapots nowadays are amazing. You put them in there 20 minutes in some broth and pull them out, and you can put a dry rub on them. You can sauce them. You can put them on the grill. You can put them in the oven. You can put them on the barbecue. You can do them up just like chicken wings. I mean, I've had dinners here where I cooked 50 goose legs, and they were the first things to disappear.
Yeah.
You know, people try those first as an hors d'oeuvre, and they eat every scrap of it.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been there for that, so I know how that goes. Because I was one of them that was hammering them. And the other thing was, you know, I've been up there and I don't know how many times, you know, we shoot a pile of snows and everybody's like, oh, I'm not going to eat those. And then all of a sudden they come over a couple days later and, you know, we processed a bunch and there's meat everywhere. And all of a sudden you whip up some snow goose dish and they're like, no, that's not snow goose. No way. And I'm like, dude, I was here. I cleaned them. I watched him cook it. Like, that's what it is. And they're like, man, I've never had that. I need the recipe, you know. So I think more people just need to be exposed to, you know, not everybody's as lucky as me. Like, I get to spend time with you, like, firsthand cooking and doing all this stuff and actually watching all these and reading the recipes and seeing, okay, this one would take a little longer. I don't know if I'll get to that one, but this one was pretty quick and pretty easy. I think I'm in on this one. You know, there's certain things. You just got to, you know, put it towards your lifestyle and figure it out. So,
oh, absolutely. And once you do, you'll embrace it. And it's not hard. You know, the biggest, here's a really good way to understand it. I tell people when you cook a beefsteak, you put it on the grill and you grill it for 5 to 7 minutes on one side, turn it over and cook it again for 5 to 7 minutes, and it'll come off medium rare to medium.
Right.
If you were to do that with the same size elk or moose steak, it would be well done. And if you do it with a duck or a goose breast, it will be extremely well done. Right. And, you know, the best way to describe it is, think of Kobe beef when you're looking at beef. And I know it's got an exaggerated amount of fat, but all beef has marbling in it. That's what we raise our beef for, is to marble them.
Right.
Well, that is insulation. So when you cook it, whether it's in a frying pan, on a grill, on a barbecue, whatever, you have to heat that fat in different layers, and it takes a lot longer for the heat to penetrate through that entire steak. Where elk is lean protein, there's zero fat. You know, all the fat that they actually store would be on the outer sides of their hindquarters or on their kidneys, in their, you know, important parts where winter is going to cause havoc with them.
Right, where they're insulated.
So, you know, it's going to heat way faster. Like, dense protein is going to actually carry heat quicker, and it's going to penetrate the meat quicker, and it's going to cook in half the time. So I do elk steaks, and I never cook them more than 7 minutes on the grill. Like,
right.
3.5 minutes per side is usually max, and they're done perfect every time. Duck and goose will cook even quicker, and that's because when you look at the grain of the meat, they're extremely fine-grained, and they heat through very quickly. So you can dry them out, which is going to make them... It changes the texture, and it changes the palatability of them very quick. So the one thing is, if you are having trouble cooking wild game properly, cut your cooking time in half and try them, and you'll probably reduce your cooking time even more the next time and go, wow, that wasn't very difficult.
Well, and here's another thing, like you were talking about, you know, the fat. Obviously, there's no fat on a bird as well. It's on the outside where the feathers are. So if you pluck at least the breasts and then you cut your breasts off and leave the fat on, that's going to help. That's going to help a tremendous amount keeping that meat, you know, like, you know, juicy, moist, that fat is cooking through. Like, that's a huge deal. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
The moisture is an important part of it. And the fat, I mean, some people, again, will be shaking their head in disgust or disbelief, but the fat has incredible flavor. Every year we take ducks and geese that are in prime condition. When our late-season honkers come through, I love to shoot them, pluck the breasts, remove them with the skin and the fat on them, and I turn them into goose bacon.
Right.
And if you can picture it, I mean, there's a thick layer of skin. There's a quarter to a half inch of fat, and then there's the breast underneath it. And when we cure those, it takes, you know, 6 to 10 days. I use a High Mountain buckboard cure mix, so it's extremely simple. It's 1 tablespoon per pound of meat. You rub it in there, put it in the fridge, turn it over after day 3, and take it out, rinse it, and put it in the smoker and smoke it. I mean, you cut each piece of bacon, and that fat, when it cooks, renders out.
Right, it's just perfect.
Who doesn't like bacon? I mean, it talks to the value of the fat and the added value with the flavor that you get. And hunters really need to embrace that. If you're a waterfowl hunter and you haven't embraced waterfowl fat yet, it's time to do that. Your heart doctor might not agree with you, but your taste buds certainly will.
There's no doubt about that. We're on the FA podcast. We're talking to Brad Fanson from Alberta. Brad's an outdoor writer, an outdoor chef, and he is all over the world. So I wanted to introduce you guys to him because him and I are like peas and carrots when we go around the country and go different places and all our shenanigans together. So I wanted to get Brad on and get you guys acquainted with him because he'll be on a bunch as we grow Final Approach and keep going. He's a good friend. He's an absolute killer. So yeah, he's in the club. He's in the family. There's no doubt. You're part of the family.
Well, it's an honor.
he's a friend of ours. That's how we say it. He's a friend of ours. That's how you get introduced. So, shout out to a couple companies that have helped us this past year, on a lot of our quests and adventures, for Final Approach, especially, the guys at Benelli have been a great asset and a great help this past year. So is JJ and all the folks at Federal. And we're already planning stuff for this fall again. Of course, Mossy Oak. I've been a Mossy Oak guy for a long, long time, longer than I can, you know, want to talk about. So yeah, but yeah, all those companies have helped us. And of course, you know, there's a couple of companies like right here in my hometown that are always supporting us and Leupold and Benchmade. My, you know, I got friends there and everybody there. So they're now, this is one thing that you need to know, Brad. My buddy Anthony at Benchmade has a knife coming that I'm not going to say the name because I don't want to give it up, but it's coming. But it's supposed to be geared very much toward meat cutting.
Ooh.
So, I mean, you know what kind of blades they make. Like, you know, it's scary sharp. You know, if you want to keep all your fingers.
Yeah, they have, not only do they make an incredible knife with an incredible edge, but they back it up with a lifetime warranty for sharpening.
Yeah.
Like, when I got my first one, I was kind of shocked. I read the warranty, and it's like, if your knife gets dull and you can't sharpen it, send it back to us, and we'll put the original edge back on it free of charge. I'm like, what? You know, who's good at sharpening knives?
Nobody. I got crappy knives that I sharpen just like on a thing that just tries to get me through. You know what I mean? I'm not that guy. So yeah. He's like, yeah, bro, just try this, and when it gets dull, I'll get it and I'll just take it over there and get it sharpened. I was like, oh my god, that's perfect because I don't know what I'm doing. You know, he's talking about the edge and what angle it's at, and this knife's at this edge, and I was like, dude, you're way over my head, but that's awesome. Like, you guys are in the knife game. I love it, you know, and I'll let you guys do your thing. I'm in the decoy. I'll do my thing. And the blind market, I'll stay there. Hey, couple questions that I'm looking on Facebook right now. So Kevin Grant is always hit me up here. He's a good kid. Actually went to school with James. James taught him at Auto Shop over at Tigard. So he said, does Brad turn any ducks and geese into like snack sticks? He's looking for a good recipe for like, you know, meat sticks.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I mean,
yeah,
you've been here when we've had snow geese coming through. I mean, they're naive. We're the first agricultural fields they see. And we've had some weeks where we shoot 800 snow geese. So of course you need to process some of them and grind them and turn them into different things, and we've made pepperonis and honey garlic sticks and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And the best advice I can give you for anyone starting out and not knowing what they're doing is pick up a high mountain kit. They're very inexpensive. They come with all the ingredients. They come with the cure. They come with the casing. You can grind your meat, add some pork, put it together, mix it, and you can actually finish them in the oven. But if you have a smoker, I always like to add some flavor to it.
Right.
But a very easy way to do it and a great way to utilize extra waterfowl, or if you're shooting early season birds like we do when they don't have that incredible ring of fat on them.
That's right.
You know, it's another wonderful use. Snacking sticks are a crowd pleaser. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, just like you said, like hey, we're going to shoot some birds early. Run those, you know, either if you're not sure on what you're doing, take them somewhere and get some done, or do them yourself, and then you have the rest of the last part of the season, you know what I mean, to be handing them out and eating them and you know, doing those. Those are you know, unfortunately, they're probably better for you than Pop-Tarts.
Well, there's no better incentive sitting back in your layout blind to shoot more birds than to pass around some pepperoni sticks or honey garlic or teriyaki or, you know, one of the multi flavors that that you can build from the High Mountain kits. They're pretty amazing, and they taste great. And part of the key to making those is adding pork to it, because waterfowl is dry, so you can't use straight waterfowl meat because it just doesn't have enough moisture in it. When you smoke it, cook it, it'll dry out and they crumble. So you've had our moose cookies, you've had duck cookies, you know. Part of the secret to that is using some pork to add some moisture when you need to, and that's nothing that hunters need to be embarrassed about. You know, people make beef sausage, they add pork to it because it has more moisture. Venison sausage, I'm sure your dad in the day, he cut up more deer than most of us could probably ever imagine. Probably added a lot of pork to the various sausage and grind that he did. And waterfowl can be very lean. Here's a trick for you, though. I mean, if you have some late season birds and you can pluck them, keep the skin and the fat on them when you grind them. It really increases the flavor in your snacking sticks. You can definitely tell it's waterfowl, but it's not, I mean, it's not displeasing in any way. If anything, you will want to pluck more birds in the future.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like you said, even if you can get the breasts out with the fat on it, if you can get the leg meat off the bones, you know, obviously if you're, you know, you're doing grind, obviously you got to get all the bones out. So if you can get as much meat off the birds as possible with the fat on it, there's no doubt that's going to help you down the road.
Right, and I've seen lots of people trim and trim and trim and try to remove all of that and pull it off and pick at it and try to wash it. But, you know, you nailed it. You pull the skin off and try to leave any fat possible on the meat itself. You and I did a hunt in Saskatchewan in the fall and shot a bunch of cranes, and we cleaned those and left the fat attached to the meat. And that on the barbecue is, it's money is the only way to put it. I've cooked several of them here for people, and they are dumbfounded at how good they taste. And that fat and the rendering of the fat on top of the meat is a big part of the equation to incredible flavor at the end of the cooking process.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the crazy part is, like everybody would say, you know, the ribeye of the sky and make those comments and talk about all that. And listen, this was my first year shooting cranes. I mean, we did it over in Saskatchewan with Garrett and the guys at Lucky Lake. And then we went down to Oklahoma, Texas, Oklahoma, and was with my guys down there with Evan Sabalitas. And each time we cooked them, I mean, it was – there's no doubt – that it cooks like a steak, just like you're talking about. This is different than goose. Goose is different than duck. You know, snow goose, if they're eating this, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, if you shoot an antelope in the sagebrush versus an antelope in the alfalfa, I guarantee they're going to taste a little different because it's what they've been putting in their bodies and what it's throwing off. I mean, it changes all that, but whatever the cranes eat, oh my God, it cooks just like a steak, I think.
It does, and a lot of that has to do with the texture and the grain of the meat.
Correct.
I mean, grain is very similar to beef in terms of the length of the grain for each strand of protein that's in there.
Yeah.
And it's just a mental reminder of a beefsteak. You know, that brings up a really important part of cooking waterfowl, is what are the big mistakes people make.
Oh, perfect.
And here's the one tip that I can give people. Ducks are extremely fine-grained. I mean, the best way to demonstrate that is next time you shoot one and you have a pellet hole going through the breast and feathers, start picking that out, and the meat will start coming apart in little wee hairs. It's so fine-grained that the texture, you can get texture that is not palatable. So one of the biggest mistakes people make with ducks is over marinating. So if you like put a marinade on a duck and throw it in the fridge for a day and a half, you're probably going to cook it and say it tastes like liver, because you break down that fine texture even further and it just pills up in your mouth.
Right.
You know, when I marinate ducks, it's 20 to 30 minutes. You want to add some flavor, but you don't want to change what it is. You don't want to change the protein. You don't want to change the structure of it. You don't want it to break down further because it's already extremely tender and fine-grained. So once you understand that and embrace it, it makes it much easier to cook them. So anyone that tells you that their birds taste like liver, the first thing I do is say, do you marinate them? Yes. Do you put them in the fridge overnight? Yes. Well, just quit doing that. Right. And you'll be much happier with the end results.
Right. Well, and like you said, preparation and all that, that's half the battle, and trying to get there is a big part of the battle. So the prep, watch your prep.
Yep.
I mean, my keys, me being a novice, I would say watch your prep and your length of prep, you know what I mean? Like you said, don't marinate, you know, for 24 hours, you know.
Right.
Marinate for what? Would you say 6 to 8? Is that fair?
Most of the time, I literally do 20 to 30 minutes on a marinade.
Okay. So marinate, we'll just make it easy. Marinate less than an hour. You know, watch your cook times, you know, because you're, like you said, once you cook it too long, you're changing the composition, and that's why it's tough or it's dry or you can't cut it or the dog doesn't even want to eat it. Like, you've ruined it. You know what I mean? You've ruined the texture and the composition of it. You've taken bread and you've got burnt toast. That's what you did to it. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, that's really what, I mean, that's the best thing that I could think of. You took a nice piece of bread, you put it in the toaster and you put it on like 9. It's been in there for 3 minutes. It pops out. It's blacker than the bottom of your shoe. And now nobody's eaten it. So you've ruined it.
Yeah. You know, most of us freeze waterfowl as well.
Right.
So another good tip is, the most important thing you can do when you take a bird out of the freezer is thaw it properly. Don't put it in the sink and leave it overnight. Like, could you imagine walking into your supermarket and finding a piece of meat that's been sitting on a counter for 12 to 16 hours?
Yeah.
You never thaw them in the fridge. The other thing you want to do is score the package, put it in a colander, and set it in a bowl and put it in the fridge. Now, whether you do elk, moose, deer, goose, or whatever,
right,
there's going to be an incredible amount of liquid that comes off of that meat when it thaws. You know, you go into a supermarket and buy a beefsteak, they have a blotter cloth underneath them, and there's a reason they do that.
That's right.
Is because that meat does sweat. It gives off a lot of moisture. Some people call it blood, but it's more than that. But when you're thawing meat and you let it sit in that moisture for hours or days, it will have an impact.
Right.
So score the package with a knife on the bottom when it's frozen, put it in a colander, set it in a bowl, put it in the fridge, let it thaw slowly, naturally, and let that moisture drain off. And tell me that it doesn't make a huge difference in the flavor. Some people like to marinate their waterfowl to remove some of that natural liquid within them, like some of the blood and the stronger flavors, and you can use a salt brine, a little bit of salt and sugar. High Mountain also makes a brine mix that you can use. But again, it's like anything in life. The way you handle it is going to really impact the end quality of a dish. And we take our lessons from meat handling at any supermarket store, butcher shop. I mean, your dad was probably very cautious about everything he did. Everything was top quality. That's why he had, you know, hundreds of deer carcasses come through his cooler every fall. So when we see the way that things are done on a commercial basis, we can take a note and just do the same at home. Like,
there's no doubt.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
you know, as soon as you said that, you said, you know, marinate them. The first thing that came to my mind, believe it or not, was. I was going to ask you, like, how about this for a marinade? And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. We already did that. I remember me and you were in New Zealand, and all the chaps, all the mates are drinking these Jack and Coke. I've never...
Premix.
Yeah, it was a premix. It was half Jack, half Coke, and all you did was, like, mix it up or whatever. And
yep.
I've never seen anything like that, right? So, and I was looking at it, and everybody's drinking one, and I go, hey, I wonder what would that taste like if we marinate the birds with that? And then didn't we do that and cook them the next night, and they were incredible.
Oh, yeah. And that was funny because everyone in New Zealand plucks every bird. So this is almost the opposite mentality of what we've been talking about.
Right.
They pluck them, they roast them. When we were out hunting, we ate cold roast duck in the blind, and it was wonderful. You know, they do a really slow roast on them. They're tender, they're moist, they're awesome. But we had the back of a truck that was full of birds.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to be here for 12 hours cleaning. And I said, well, let's brush some of them. They're like, what? You know, it's really the opposite of North American mentality.
That's right.
You want to brush these birds? And let's brush some and we'll, you know, get me another one of those Jack and Cokes and we're going to pour some on and cook some of them up. And that's exactly what we did.
Well, and you know, just to say they're opposite. But, you know, they're opposite when we were doing that. But then you and I were going to shoot turkeys and they're like, yeah, just throw them in the pile right here and we'll just throw them out. And we're like, you're going to do what with the turkeys?
They won't eat them. Like it's the mentality of hunters in different places, different communities. Unless it's hard to hunt, hard to harvest, they don't think they're any good. So in New Zealand, the harder you have to work for something, the better it tastes. And because they don't hunt turkeys on a regular basis, they're not as wild as they are in North America.
Yeah, they're not as respected. Right,
so
they're not as respected.
They don't see them as a good bird for the pot.
Yeah, yeah. Crazy. So, all right, we're pushing.
That's another story altogether.
Yeah, that's what I said. Don't worry. Listen, we're going to I think we need to pick a couple topics for next time and discuss. And I could throw, you know, I could throw something out there on our Instagram or whatever to see, like, what would somebody want to know about? Like, do they want to know about, you know, like going to Canada and hunting Canada? Do they want to talk about some bucket list trips and going to, you know, New Zealand or doing something like that? You know what I mean? I could throw up some questions and see what anybody would want to hear because, you know, like New Zealand is a bucket list thing. There's no doubt about it. You know, heading to Europe, going to Canada is a bucket list. You know, I'm fortunate enough to come up there all the time, you know, but it is truly a bucket list to come up there if you're from down here. So,
I think that's your topic. It's bucket list locations for waterfowl hunts because I still have several on mine. I've hunted all over North America from the Arkansas rice fields and flooded timber to the Columbia River to, you know, I helicoptered into the far Arctic and shot snow geese on the tidal flats of Hudson Bay. But
nuts.
There are some trips that people definitely haven't heard about and need to think about if you're an avid waterfowler.
Well, maybe we do that. Maybe the next one we'll do bucket list trips and we'll go through a couple and you know, and we'll, you know, cause they always have those bucket list trips and they always put them like in the magazines and stuff. And they always talk about them. And it's like, I don't know. You know, like a bucket list trip to me is like, okay, is there an animal I'm searching for that's like on that, you know what I mean? Or is there some scenery or a place that I want to be? Cause there's different versions of a bucket list and it's different for other people too. You know what I mean? So it might be, I want to go, you know, obviously you could do it now in Texas and on a bunch of the ranches, but I want to go shoot an axis deer because of the meat. You know what I mean? Like that's a different deal, or I want to go here. So I definitely think we do that. I think that's something that people would get a kick out of, as well as, you know, now there's a program, me and Bobby, who helps me and Bobby are working on a program, and I got a tip from somebody else about when we're doing the podcast, you could actually pull some pictures up so people can see it on when we're doing it live. So that's something I want to get in place before we do that, because I want to throw up some pictures of, you know, hey, here's you with your, you know, here's you with your stag in New Zealand, or here's us with some paradise ducks in New Zealand, or, you know, here we are with a bunch of, you know, specks and snows up in Alberta, or cranes in, you know, Oklahoma or Saskatchewan or whatever. So I'm going to get that figured out so then we could pop some pictures up, because that'll just make it killer, you know?
Yeah, the ultimate tease.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Listen, you know, it's all worthless unless you got pictures, so...
And we happen to have a few of those.
And we'll definitely put up our turkey pictures from New Zealand, which always, no matter where we are, always becomes the topic of a discussion, like, let me see that again. So, yeah. So we'll have to pull that out. That's probably the most requested picture when you and I are out, you know, when we start talking about something. So,
well, we'll have to make sure that we post that is in New Zealand, or we'll probably be investigated by several enforcement.
They'll be like, you guys are going to jail. You can't shoot that many. So yeah. We'll let you know where we did that. We're on the up and up. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you and I just couldn't fall into the local mentality and cleaned birds and had turkey breasts and legs and thighs. More than what the average hunter could ever imagine.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. So that's another discussion. There's no doubt. All right, folks, we're talking to Brad Fenson. If you want to check him out online. Just Google Brad Fenson, outdoor writer, and you want to direct him to the which site for all the recipes.
You know, some of the best sites to go to, Mario, are AmericanHunter.org, MossyOak.com. And, of course, if you're a member of Delta Waterfowl, I do the Waterfowl Chef column for their magazine. So
that's right, for pulling them.
Those are some of the ones where you can get a lot of information really quick. Probably between the three, there's going to be 300 to 400 recipes for you to peruse.
There you go.
There's going to be tips for cooking waterfowl, different types of ducks, geese, legs, thighs, breasts, plucked, you name it. Sort of cover the whole gambit of information for cooking waterfowl.
Well, and guys are staring at their freezer right now, like going, oh, what am I going to do? Like, here you go. We got you.
Yep.
So awesome,
time to
buddy.
Do a beast.
That's right. Have everybody over in the summer. That's what we end up doing, having a big barbecue and having everybody bring a dish and do a different wild game dish. That's totally the way to do it. And that keeps the, you know, that keeps the camaraderie going. And, you know, you get a bunch of duck hunters around. It doesn't matter what time of year. All they're going to do is talk about duck hunting. You know, I mean, that's just what we do. So might as well have a barbecue in the summertime and get to live it, you know, live it in the summertime. So there you go.
Well, challenge your bird hunting buddies to get together once a month for a different dish. And I'll challenge you to look up American Hunter, and there's martini mallards on there.
Ooh.
You can cook those as a appetizer, and once you do that, it'll be the start for your your waterfowl cooking club, where you can get incentive for going out every fall by eating them every month of the year.
Sounds like a plan. I love it.
Good.
All right, bud. Appreciate it. Kiss the babies. I'll talk to you guys soon, and hopefully for spring snows here, we'll see what's going on.
Yeah, less than 60 days.
See that? Countdown's on.
Good.
I love it. All right, Brad, appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, Mario.
All right, thanks, Mike. All right, talking to Brad Fenson, great guy, incredible shot, incredible chef, incredible guy, great photography. So next time you see a piece written by him, you know, you'll kind of feel a little bit better, like you know him. I mean, he's one of us. There's no doubt about it. A couple questions I want to throw out there. There's a couple people that asked, hey, where's all the late season goose hunts? There's a couple. I'm familiar with the ones on the West Coast here. So Oregon, where we have our permit zone, a late season. Klamath down in southern Oregon, they'll have a late spec shoot. And that's usually, I mean, Levi, he emailed before and got on and commented, like, and we were just talking about that today, like, dude, if you don't have private property or the spot for it, man, it's a tough deal. There's only a couple outfitters down there that handle it, and if you don't have private property where they're going, man, that's a tough one. So so if anybody else has any other tips, you could always hit us up, you know, hit us up on Instagram. You could follow us there. You can get on our Facebook page, like us there. We're adding some more videos up on our constantly up on our YouTube channel, so you could subscribe. So go to that, and of course the podcast's up. So that's really about it. That's February 5th. That's our podcast for today. Appreciate it. Final Approach. You can go to check us out. Finalapproach.com, fabrand.com is the website, and it's Final Approach. Appreciate it.